Welcome back to the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. I'm Brittany Sheets here with Angela Bachman.
Hello.
We are having fun here, guys. We're coming to our final stretch, the end of the line, the last lap. And joining us for that, as always, to finish us off is Buck Gino of Work in Progress Radio. Welcome back, Buck.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, ladies, on Friday. And hopefully you don't run that last lap like that guy did on that race. Did you see that where he was running that long-distance race and he kind of was raising his hands and slowed up and the other guy passed him at the finish line?
I did. That is a cardinal rule of track and field, man. As a track runner myself since the time I was in seventh grade, you do not quit till after you've crossed the finish line and you never look back who's behind you.
There you go. Anyway, it's great to be with you.
And you have a friend with you.
Yes, I do. I have John Ruhring with John is with the Michigan Information and Research Service. He's actually the publisher and owner, right, John?
Absolutely, and thanks again for having me on, Buck.
We appreciate your participation, John. Well, John, you know, you can't hardly talk about Michigan unless you talk about Proposal 1. It seems like I had about less than two or three flyers in my mailbox in the last 2 days, plus the TV ads. You know, for the listeners who don't know, maybe you could explain a short synopsis of what it Prop 1 does and where we're at today.
Actually, a week from next Tuesday, we're all going to be asked to go to the polls and cast a ballot on a proposal that would raise the state sales tax from 6% to 7%. It would actually increase the earned income tax credit as well, which kind of helps about 15,000 Michigan income or lower income families deal with that higher sales tax. And ultimately, what it's going to do is raise $1.2 billion a year to improve our roads, the condition of our roads. We're all familiar with the rattling and the teeth jarring you can get going down the roads. The proposal is it's getting a lot of attention, like you just mentioned. We actually ran a story this week. One of our friends tallied up the ad buys for next week for Proposal 1, and they're going to be spending $1.75 million on ads in the final week. So get ready to hear some more about that proposal.
Well, John, I guess the thing of it is that I guess you and I talked about this a week or so ago, and was it actually I talked about the need of the legislators to get out and get behind this, and I got to tell you, I wasn't at one because I couldn't attend it. I had a township meeting the same night, but there was actually a town hall here in Fremont, Michigan, and it was held by John Bumstead, and he actually had, you know, someone who was there for it and someone who was against it, and they were able to, you know, give their little spiel. But, you know, the thing that was really, really telling to me was that the legislator, he didn't stand up and give a rah-rah speech in support of it. So
no,
I think
no,
that the,
it's interesting. We did a survey a couple of weeks back. I think we got up to 63%. We asked 100 of our 148 lawmakers what their position were. Some of them, a lot of them didn't want to say in public where they were coming down, but about 63% supported. And there isn't a lot of buy-in, particularly from Republicans. I think it's somewhere around the neighborhood of about half of the Republican county parties have actually voted and adopted resolutions opposing this plan. I think somebody said it's they've never seen anything like it before, where a Republican governor comes out for a proposal and so many Republicans and grassroots groups come out against them. So there's not a lot of, it's not a passion. There's nobody who has a really big passion except perhaps the governor and the road builders as far as getting it passed. It's probably something, it's like, you know, when you have to take that cough medicine when you're a kid, you know you need to do it, but you don't want to do it. And so nobody's really excited about this thing.
You know, John, you mentioned something that was kind of telling. You mentioned the lack of enthusiasm, basically, behind the Republican governor from the Republican legislature. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think, well, first of all, when you look at the proposal in total, it's a very large tax increase. And Republicans, you know, they don't like tax increases. Going all the way back to the early 80s, I believe it was Jim Blanchard who got through a temporary personal income tax hike, and the Democrats lost control of the state Senate, I think it was probably within a year or two, if I remember right, later, and they never gained it back. So there's this real fear in Lansing from a political prospect of raising of taxes. So that alone is one of the reasons they don't like it. It's terribly complicated. It's hard to explain. Basically, you're retrofitting the whole way that the state of Michigan taxes its fuel. You know, we used to do it on a 19 cents per gallon was the state fee. It'll now go to a wholesale price-based fee, so it'll rise and fall with the price of gasoline. We're taking sales tax off of what you buy at the pump. So there's a lot of different moving parts. And then you throw in that earned income tax credit, and it's just it's hard to explain. I think that's one reason Republicans are they're just not very warm about it.
And for sure, I mean, there's all this discussion about what will happen. And is there a plan B if it goes down?
I don't really think there's a plan B. I think there's a number of different lawmakers that have proposed going back to, I don't know if you remember, but last session when this whole thing started to get going, Speaker Jay Spolger proposed a $500 million solution. I think the governor said, and other groups, outside groups, have pegged the need at $1.2 billion to $2 billion, depending on whose numbers you want to use. So it doesn't really get you there. It's kind of a Band-Aid, trying to use a Band-Aid to close a surgical wound. So, you know, that's it's kind of where we're at with it.
Well, it's an interesting time, and it'll be an interesting election. And as all elections, it'll be who are the people that turn out and who are the people that stay home. But there is one thing for sure, that you don't have to drive very far on any of these roads to see that we actually need to do something. We've been needing to do something for years. And so get ready, as John said, in the next few days. You know, I would expect your phone to ring, too, so along with the stuff in the mailbox. So,
oh, yeah, there's robocalls. There's robocalls on the opposition, too, so that the phone systems are going to be going crazy.
The main focus is to make sure that you get on vote, and everybody should exercise the right, whether you're for or against, to make sure you exercise your right to vote. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, there was a piece that came up maybe a week or so ago, and we've been looking at the Republican cast, if you will, that are supposedly auditioning for the office of president. And one more name came up, our own Governor Snyder, correct?
Yes, he's getting some attention nationally. He is, he and his supporters are putting together I think it's a nonprofit 501c4, to fund his travel. He's very coy about it, though, when you ask him directly. He still hasn't ruled it out. He hasn't ruled it in, but apparently there's a group of Republican backers in Michigan that are trying to convince him to at least try it. And, you know, if you think about Rick Snyder and possibly running for president, on paper he's got a resume that you can sell. I mean, he's the governor of the 10th largest state. During his tenure, the unemployment rates dropped from 11.5% to 5.6%. He took a big political risk and kind of took an emergency manager, put it in place in the city of Detroit, restructured that, and eliminated billions of dollars of debt for that city to hopefully begin to restore some services and get to the point where it's got some flexibility. So, I mean, if from a Republican standpoint, you can kind of make some arguments. But he's also, if you think about it, got a little bit of a detriment, too. I think he's not considered by the far right as conservative enough. We were talking about it with some people this week. If you think about an Iowa presidential caucus, is he conservative enough? Is he right to life enough? And I kind of wonder how he would do in that case. But he's certainly, you can make the argument, but. It's interesting, too, though, we've actually had, if you think about our governors, we've had Romney, George Romney was talked about and ran for president. I don't remember if Milliken was. I know Blanchard was talked about, the possibility for national office. John Engler was talked about as a possible vice president. Even Jennifer Granholm was talked about as a possible cabinet member. So it's not,
sure.
Not the first one.
Yeah. Well, also, I know Snyder could, you know, there's other, you know, cases, as you said, as Granholm was auditioning for a cabinet post, the same could be same for Mr. Snyder, probably, you know, and his expertise probably would be in the Commerce Department. But like I say, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, and he's actually put together a fund, so to speak, or put together a PAC to do this?
Yeah, there's a former Republican Party Chairman Bobby Shostak is actually making calls. trying to fundraise for the governor to put money into this fund that they're saying is arguably for the purposes of paying for the governor's travel. He's slated this weekend to go to the White House Correspondents Association dinner. I think he's headed off to Nevada shortly thereafter for a Republican conclave. So he's hitting the trip ticket. The interesting thing about the fund, though, is remember this governor got into a little bit of trouble with what was called the Nerd Fund. They were using some of that money to pay for a state official. I think his chief innovation officer, his salary was drawn from that. He got a little bit of bad press, and they kind of took that down. They really haven't talked yet about this new fund and released the names of any donors yet. That's something we've been asking his press office for in terms of the list of the donors. I think the name of the fund is the Michigan Accountability Fund. So one of the things that needs to live up to is probably its name in terms of turning over who's giving the dollars to the fund. So.
That being said, we're talking to John Roerink of the Michigan Information and Research Service in Michigan, and you're listening to the Union Edge, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Detroit and the Detroit Public Schools.
Is America truly the land of the free when working families have to struggle to survive? Are workers free to achieve the American dream?
The Teamsters Union is North America's strongest union. We fight for our 1.4 million members and all of America's working families. Teamsters are fighting for the rights of the middle class in Washington, in state capitals, in city councils, and most important, in the workplace. Join us in the fight to keep the American dream alive.
Connect with the Teamsters Union at teamster.org, Facebook, and Twitter.
I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration, a tool, not an obstacle. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Make more. Teach. Visit teach.org. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
It's about the work. Work we're proud of. Work that provides the energy that powers America. Work that means our communities are stronger, better, for our families, our neighbors, for everyone. Just like you, members of the United Mine Workers of America are on the job. Every day, working hard. It's what we do, and it makes America a better place. The United Mine Workers of America, working families just like yours.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Hi, I'm Al Roker. Let me tell you what's happening in your neck of the woods. Right now, 1 in 6 Americans don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are our neighbors, friends, our co-workers, but we can do something about it. Visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find the local food bank in your community. I'm Al Roker, and together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Members of the American Postal Workers Union handle more than 165 billion letters and packages a year. That's about 34 million pounds of mail every day. Ever wonder what this costs you as a taxpayer? Millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions? Not a single cent. The United States Postal Service doesn't run on your tax dollars. It's funded solely by stamps and postage. Brought to you by the men and women of the American Postal Workers Union.
Welcome back to the Union Edge, Laborers Talk Radio. I'm Angela Bachman, and I'm here with Brittany Sheets.
Hey, everyone.
And Buck Gino from Work in Progress Radio is going to take us out of today's show. Buck, welcome back.
It's always great to be with you on Friday, ladies, on Friday afternoon.
Always great to have you, Buck.
Yes. With us today, we have John Rurink. He's with the Michigan Information and Research Service, Incorporated in Lansing, Michigan. For a few minutes, John, tell us about your MIRS and what you do and what you're all about and how we connect with.
Oh, absolutely. We're actually a news operation. We've got five journalists. We put together reports from the Michigan Capitol, from the House and Senate floor, and key committees in the executive branch, Monday through Friday. We're online at www.mersnews.com. Kind of just a trade publication for those who really need to influence the process, know what's going on, and follow state government on a real close basis. So been doing it since 1996, so I've got the political bug in my blood, I think.
You have a website, I'm assuming.
Yep, it's at www.mersnews.com. So, and there's a free 3-week trial, folks. To welcome to go there and sign up and take a look at it and see what we do and learn a little bit more about our public policy process here in the state.
Well, John, before the break, you had mentioned something we all know about the plight of Detroit and the problems and the cash and everything in the state being taken over and you know the things that went on. But there were some numbers that came out about what it would mean for the state to assume the Detroit Public Schools. Correct? Tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. At the end of March, there was a coalition. It's called the Coalition for the Future of Detroit School Children. They've been looking at the Detroit public school system. The Detroit public schools have had a very unique set of problems. If you go back to 2004, this is a district that had 150,000 students. You dial the clock forward to 2014, they had 49,000 students. So a dramatic drop off in terms of the size of the district, and the district's facing a lot of financial problems. And they've been in and out of state control as well. But this coalition came out, and one of the strong suggestions that they had, that they'd like to see the state is assume about $124 million in long-term existing debt that the district owes. The Citizens Research Council, which is a statewide public policy research group, did a little study, came out and did some analysis, and basically the state legislature would have to come up with about I think it'd be $1,100 more per pupil for each Detroit school children just to take that part of the debt. Now, the second part of this coalition's recommendation was they wanted the states to take on responsibility for paying their employer contribution to the Michigan Public School Employees Retirement System. This is a statewide system that every school district pays in. The percentage right now is about 34% of every 34 cents on every dollar of employee cost school district space go into this public school employees retirement system to sustain the retirement system for teachers. So if you combine that with the long-term debt, you're talking about $2,500 more per student that the state would have to come up with, which raises a lot of questions on a political basis. Sort of think about the legislature. There are a lot of out-state lawmakers who may have districts that are struggling. They're going to say, well, if Detroit gets that kind of relief from the pension system, why not our district? So getting there is going to be really interesting. I think the governor this week was supposed to propose a reform plan for the Detroit public school system. He was going to split it in two. He has actually postponed that a little bit. This is a real complex issue for the state and for the city of Detroit to deal with.
Well, it's interesting in the fact, would they, you know, when you mentioned the pension for the teachers, and is that something that they would leave alone, or do you think that in the end there would be some sort of a cut to that? I mean, that's what the fear is all the time. If the state is always going to take over something, that they're going to lose something.
Well, there's not a lot of talk about any cuts right now. But, again, the problem is if you do this for the state's largest school district, you say, We're gonna relieve you for 4 or 5 or 6 years from having to make that contribution. How many other school districts are kind of teetering on the financial edge that are then gonna make a strong argument that they should get the same treatment? Well, if you do that, then how long is it before the sort of the underpinnings, if you will, supporting that retirement system will almost dictate or mandate cuts? So there's not really any talk right now about cuts as far as fundamental changes, but it mm-hmm. sort of raises the specter that there could be enough financial challenge to this system down the line if you sort of open up that floodgate. You don't know what you're going to get at the end of the day. So,
as you were talking, Bill, and I was thinking on my hand, I counted five alone that I, in my own mind that would be in that same category. So,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just.
So it's a tough issue. But it's certainly something I think the lawmakers are going to have to look at. And that was really with a recommendation to the Citizens Research Council. They said, you know, it's a public policy decision. The legislature needs to decide, and the governor needs to decide where they want to do that for Detroit. But if you're going to go there, you have to have a well-thought-out policy of how you're going to approach the issue and how you're going to tackle the issue for other districts that are facing similar financial tough times.
You know, and we just got a few minutes left, but, you know, in your estimation, you talked a little bit about at the beginning. We all talked about Detroit, but things have turned out pretty good for the city of Detroit, no?
They're starting to. Certainly, if you look at the whole financial situation of the city, one of the challenges that I know that the mayor has talked about, that he still doesn't think he's got enough resources. I don't know if you remember, but they did a census of buildings during the course mm-hmm. of this Detroit bankruptcy last fall, and they had somewhere in the neighborhood of 70,000 abandoned buildings in that city, and the mayor was trying to get a lot of federal funding and state funding, was hoping for more state funding out of the bankruptcy than he got for removing these buildings. But certainly, flexibility-wise, it sounds like they're going to be able to spend more money on improving city services. I think the lighting situation is being addressed in a systematic way. So this is a community where they were having trouble just keeping safety of streetlights going in the evening. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I think the bankruptcy has probably given them a chance at a return that they might not have otherwise had.
Well, John, we're coming toward the end. Tell us your organization's website again, please, so we can connect.
Oh, absolutely. Again, it's MERS. The website is www.mersnews.com, and we're online, and there's a free three-week trial. People are welcome to sign up and take a look at it.
Thank you very much for joining us, John. We really appreciate it. John Rink of Michigan Information and Research Service, Incorporated. That being said, remember to get out and vote on May 6th here in Michigan, and remember the words of William Arthur Ward. Our words reveal our thoughts. Our manners mirror our self-esteem. Our actions reflect our character. That's the important one. Our habits predict the future. For Charles Showalter, Angela Bachman, Brittany Sheets, I'm Buck Gino, and you've been listening to The Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio.